Science and Health, Chapter 4, Christian Science versus Spiritualism. And when they shall say unto you, seek unto them that have familiar spirits, and unto wizards that peep, and that matter, should not a people seek unto their God? Isaiah. Verily, verily, I say unto you, if a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. Then said the Jews unto him, now we know that thou hast a devil. John. Mortal existence is an enigma. Every day is a mystery. The testimony of the corporeal senses cannot inform us what is real and what is delusive, but the revelations of Christian Science unlock the treasures of truth. Whatever is false or sinful can never enter the atmosphere of spirit. There is but one spirit. Man is never God. But spiritual man, made in God's likeness, reflects God. In this scientific reflection, the ego and the Father are inseparable. The supposition that corporeal beings are spirits, or that there are good and evil spirits, is a mistake. The divine mind maintains all identities, from a blade of grass to a star, as distinct and eternal. The questions are, what are God's identities? What is soul? Does life or soul exist in the thing formed? Nothing is real and eternal. Nothing is spirit but God and His idea. Evil has no reality. It is neither person, place, nor thing, but is simply a belief, an illusion of material sense. The identity or idea of all reality continues forever. But spirit, or the divine principle of all, is not in spirit's formations. Soul is synonymous with spirit, God, the creative, governing, infinite principle outside of finite form, which forms only reflect. Close your eyes, and you may dream that you see a flower, that you touch and smell it. Thus you learn that the flower is a product of the so-called mind, a formation of thought rather than of matter. Close your eyes again, and you may see landscapes, men and women. Thus you learn that these also are images, which mortal mind holds and evolves, and which simulate mind, life, and intelligence. From dreams also you learn that neither mortal mind nor matter is the image or likeness of God, and that immortal mind is not in matter. When the science of mind is understood, spiritualism will be found mainly erroneous, having no scientific basis nor origin, no proof nor power outside of human testimony. It is the offspring of the physical senses. There is no sensuality in spirit. I never could believe in spiritualism. The basis and structure of spiritualism are alike material and physical. Its spirits are so many corporealities, limited and finite in character and quality. Spiritualism therefore presupposes spirit, which is ever infinite, to be a corporeal being, a finite form, a theory contrary to Christian Science. There is but one spiritual existence, the life of which corporeal sense can take no cognizance. The divine principle of man speaks through immortal sense. If a material body, in other words, mortal material sense, were permeated by spirit, that body would disappear to mortal sense, would be deathless. A condition precedent to communion with spirit is the gain of spiritual life. So-called spirits are but corporeal communicators. As light destroys darkness, and in the place of darkness all is light, so in absolute science, soul or God is the only truth giver to man. Truth destroys mortality and brings to light immortality. Mortal belief, the material sense of life, and immortal truth, the spiritual sense, are the tares and the wheat, which are not united by progress, but separated. Perfection is not expressed through imperfection. Spirit is not made manifest through matter, the antipode of spirit. Error is not a convenient sieve through which truth can be strained. God good, being ever present, it follows in divine logic that evil, the suppositional opposite of good, is never present. In science, individual good derived from God, the infinite all in all, may flow from the departed to mortals. But evil is neither communicable nor scientific. A sinning earthly mortal is not the reality of life nor the medium through which truth passes to earth. The joy of intercourse becomes the jest of sin when evil and suffering are communicable. Not personal intercommunion, but divine law is the communicator of truth, health, and harmony to earth and humanity. As readily can you mingle fire and frost as spirit and matter. In either case, one does not support the other. Spiritualism calls one person living in this world material, but another who has died today a sinner and supposedly will return to earth tomorrow, it terms a spirit. The fact is that neither the one nor the other is infinite spirit, for spirit is God and man is his likeness. The belief that one man as spirit can control another man as matter upsets both the individuality and the science of man, for man is image. God controls man, and God is the only spirit. Any other control or attraction of so-called spirit is a mortal belief, which ought to be known by its fruit, the repetition of evil. If spirit or God communed with mortals or controlled them through electricity or any other form of matter, the divine order and the science of omnipotent, omnipresent spirit would be destroyed. The belief that material bodies return to dust hereafter to rise up as spiritual bodies with material sensations and desires is incorrect. Equally incorrect is the belief that spirit is confined in a finite material body from which it is freed by death, and that when it is freed from the material body, spirit retains the sensations belonging to that body. It is a grave mistake to suppose that matter is any part of the reality of intelligent existence, or that spirit and matter, intelligence and non-intelligence, can commune together. This error science will destroy. The sensual cannot be made the mouthpiece of the spiritual, nor can the finite become the channel of the infinite. There is no communication between so-called material existence and spiritual life, which is not subject to death. To be on communicable terms with spirit, persons must be free from organic bodies, and their return to a material condition after having once left it would be as impossible as would be the restoration to its original condition of the acorn, already absorbed into a sprout which has risen above the soil. The seed which has germinated has a new form and state of existence. When here or hereafter the belief of life in matter is extinct, the error which has held the belief dissolves with the belief and never returns to the old condition. No correspondence nor communion can exist between persons in such opposite dreams as the belief of having died and left a material body and the belief of still living in an organic material body. The caterpillar, transformed into a beautiful insect, is no longer a worm, nor does the insect return to fraternize with or control the worm. Such a backward transformation is impossible in science. Darkness and light, infancy and manhood, sickness and health are opposites, different beliefs, which never blend. Who will say that infancy can utter the ideas of manhood, that darkness can represent light, that we are in Europe when we are in the opposite hemisphere? There is no bridge across the gulf which divides two such opposite conditions as the spiritual or incorporeal and the physical or corporeal. In Christian Science, there is never a retrograde step, never a return to positions outgrown. The so-called dead and living cannot commune together, for they are in separate states of existence or consciousness. This simple truth lays bare the mistaken assumption that man dies as matter but comes to life as spirit. The so-called dead, in order to reappear to those still in the existence cognized by the physical senses, would need to be tangible and material, to have a material investiture, or the material senses could take no cognizance of the so-called dead. Spiritualism would transfer men from the spiritual sense of existence back into its material sense. This gross materialism is scientifically impossible, since to infinite spirit there can be no matter. Jesus said of Lazarus, "Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep." Jesus restored Lazarus by the understanding that Lazarus had never died, not by an admission that his body had died and then lived again. Had Jesus believed that Lazarus had lived or died in his body, the Master would have stood on the same plane of belief as those who buried the body, and he could not have resuscitated it. When you can awaken yourself or others out of the belief that all must die, you can then exercise Jesus' spiritual power to reproduce the presence of those who have thought they died, but not otherwise. There is one possible moment when those living on the earth and those called dead can commune together, and that is the moment previous to the transition. The moment when the link between their opposite beliefs is being sundered. In the vestibule through which we pass from one dream to another dream, or when we awake from earth's sleep to the grand verities of life, the departing may hear the glad welcome of those who have gone before. The ones departing may whisper this vision, name the face that smiles on them, and the hand which beckons them, as one at Niagara, with eyes open only to that wonder, forgets all else and breathes aloud his rapture. When being is understood, life will be recognized as neither material nor finite, but as infinite, as God, universal good, and the belief that life or mind was ever in a finite form, or good in evil will be destroyed. Then it will be understood that spirit never entered matter and was therefore never raised from matter. When advanced to spiritual being and the understanding of God, man can no longer commune with matter. Neither can he return to it, any more than a tree can return to its seed. Neither will man seem to be corporeal, but he will be an individual consciousness, characterized by the divine spirit as idea, not matter. Suffering, sinning, dying beliefs are unreal. When divine science is universally understood, they will have no power over man, for man is immortal and lives by divine authority. The sinless joy, the perfect harmony and immortality of life, possessing unlimited divine beauty and goodness without a single bodily pleasure or pain, constitutes the only veritable indestructible man whose being is spiritual. This state of existence is scientific and intact, a perfection discernible only by those who have the final understanding of Christ in divine science. Death can never hasten this state of existence, for death must be overcome, not submitted to, before immortality appears. The recognition of spirit and of infinity comes not suddenly here or hereafter. The pious Polycarp said, "I cannot turn at once from good to evil. Neither do other mortals accomplish the change from error to truth at a single bound." Existence continues to be a belief of corporeal sense until the science of being is reached, Error brings its own self-destruction both here and hereafter, for mortal mind creates its own physical conditions. Death will occur on the next plane of existence as on this, until the spiritual understanding of life is reached. Then and not until then will it be demonstrated that the second death hath no power. The period required for this dream of material life, embracing its so-called pleasures and pains, to vanish from consciousness, knoweth no man, neither the Son, but the Father. This period will be of longer or shorter duration according to the tenacity of error. Of what advantage, then, would it be to us or to the departed to prolong the material state and so prolong the illusion either of a soul inert or of a sinning, suffering sense, a so-called mind fettered to matter? Even if communications from spirits to mortal consciousness were possible, such communications would grow beautifully less with every advanced stage of existence. The departed would gradually rise above ignorance and materiality, and spiritualists would outgrow their beliefs in material spiritualism. Spiritism consigns the so-called dead to a state resembling that of blighted buds, to a wretched purgatory, where the chances of the departed for improvement narrow into nothing and they return to their old standpoints of matter. The decaying flower, the blighted bud, the gnarled oak, the ferocious beast, like the discords of disease, sin, and death, are unnatural. They are the falsities of sense, the changing deflections of mortal mind. They are not the eternal realities of mind. How unreasonable is the belief that we are wearing out life and hastening to death, and that at the same time we are communing with immortality. If the departed are in rapport with mortality or matter, they are not spiritual, but must still be mortal, sinning, suffering, and dying. Then why look to them, even were communication possible, for proofs of immortality and accept them as oracles? Communications gathered from ignorance are pernicious in tendency. Spiritualism, with its material accompaniments, would destroy the supremacy of spirit. If spirit pervades all space, it needs no material method for the transmission of messages. Spirit needs no wires nor electricity in order to be omnipresent. Spirit is not materially tangible. How then can it communicate with man through electric material effects? How can the majesty and omnipotence of spirit be lost? God is not in the medley where matter cares for matter, where spiritism makes many gods, and hypnotism and electricity are claimed to be the agents of God's government. Spirit blesses man, but man cannot tell whence it cometh. By it, the sick are healed, the sorrowing are comforted, and the sinning are reformed. These are the effects of one universal God, the invisible good dwelling in eternal science. The act of describing disease, its symptoms, locality, and fatality is not scientific. Warning people against death is an error that tends to frighten into death those who are ignorant of life as God. Thousands of instances could be cited of health restored by changing the patient's thoughts regarding death. A scientific mental method is more sanitary than the use of drugs, and such a mental method produces permanent health. Science must go over the whole ground and dig up every seed of error sowing. Spiritualism relies upon human beliefs and hypotheses. Christian Science removes these beliefs and hypotheses through the higher understanding of God. For Christian Science, resting on divine principle, not on material personalities, in its revelation of immortality, introduces the harmony of being. Jesus cast out evil spirits or false beliefs. The Apostle Paul bade men have the mind that was in the Christ. Jesus did his own work by the one Spirit. He said, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work." He never described disease, so far as can be learned from the Gospels, but he healed disease. The unscientific practitioner says, "You are ill, your brain is overtaxed, and you must rest. Your body is weak, and it must be strengthened. You have nervous prostration, and must be treated for it." Science objects to all this, contending for the rights of intelligence and asserting that mind controls body and brain. Mind science teaches that mortals need not be weary in well-doing. It dissipates fatigue in doing good. Giving does not impoverish us in the service of our Maker. Neither does withholding enrich us. We have strength in proportion to our apprehension of the truth, and our strength is not lessened by giving utterance to truth. A cup of coffee or tea is not the equal of truth, whether for the inspiration of a sermon or for the support of bodily endurance. A communication purporting to come from the late Theodore Parker reads as follows: "There never was, and there never will be, an immortal spirit. Yet the very periodical containing this sentence repeats weekly the assertion that spirit communications are our only proofs of immortality. I entertain no doubt of the humanity and philanthropy of many spiritualists, but I cannot coincide with their views. It is mysticism which gives spiritualism its force. Science dispels mystery and explains extraordinary phenomena. But science never removes phenomena from the domain of reason into the realm of mysticism." It should not seem mysterious that mind without the aid of hands can move a table, when we already know that it is mind power which moves both table and hand. Even planchette, the French toy, which years ago pleased so many people, attested the control of mortal mind over its substratum called matter. It is mortal mind which convulses its
substratum
matter. These movements arise from the volition of human belief, but they are neither scientific nor rational. Mortal mind produces table tipping as certainly as table setting, and believes that this wonder emanates from spirits and electricity. This belief rests on the common conviction that mind and matter cooperate both visibly and invisibly, hence that matter is intelligent. There is not so much evidence to prove intercommunication between the so-called dead and the living, as there is to show the sick that matter suffers and has sensation. Yet, this latter evidence is destroyed
by mind science.
If spiritualists understood the science of being, their belief in
mediumship
would vanish. At the very best, and on its own theories, spiritualism can only prove that certain individuals have a continued existence after death and maintain their
affiliation
with mortal flesh. But this fact affords no certainty of everlasting life. A man's assertion that he is immortal no more proves him to be so than the opposite assertion that he is mortal would prove immortality a lie. Nor is the case improved when alleged spirits teach immortality. Life, love, truth is the only proof of immortality. Man, in the likeness of God, as revealed in science, cannot help being immortal. Though the grass seemeth to wither and the flower to fade, they reappear. Erase the figures which express number. Silence the tones of music. Give to the worms the body called man, and yet the producing, governing divine principle lives on. In the case of man, as truly as in the case of numbers and of music, despite the so-called laws of matter, which define man as mortal. Though the inharmony resulting from material sense hides the harmony of science, inharmony cannot destroy the divine principle of science. In science, man's immortality depends upon that of God, good, and follows as a necessary consequence of the immortality of good. That somebody somewhere must have known the deceased person, supposed to be the communicator, is evident, and it is as easy to read distant thoughts as near. We think of an absent friend as easily as we do of one present. It is no more difficult to read the absent mind than it is to read the present. Chaucer wrote centuries ago, yet we still read his thought in his verse. What is classic study but discernment of the minds of Homer and Virgil, of whose personal existence we may be in doubt? If spiritual life has been won by the departed, they cannot return to material existence, because different states of consciousness are involved, and one person cannot exist in two different states of consciousness at the same time. In sleep, we do not communicate with the dreamer by our side, despite his physical proximity, because both of us are either unconscious or are wandering in our dreams through different mazes of consciousness. In like manner, it would follow, even if our departed friends were near us and were in as conscious a state of existence as before the change we call death, that their state of consciousness must be different from ours. We are not in their state, nor are they in the mental realm in which we dwell. Communion between them and ourselves would be prevented by this difference. The mental states are so unlike that intercommunion is as impossible as it would be between a mole and a human being. Different dreams and different awakenings betoken a differing consciousness. When wandering in Australia, do we look for help
to the
Eskimos in their snow huts? In a world of sin and sensuality, hastening to a greater development of power, it is wise earnestly to consider whether
it is the human mind
or the divine mind which is influencing one. What the prophets of Jehovah did, the worshippers of Baal failed to do. Yet artifice and delusion claimed that they could equal the work of wisdom. Science only can explain the incredible good and evil elements now coming to the surface. Mortals must find refuge in truth in order to escape the error of these latter days. Nothing is more antagonistic to Christian Science than a blind belief without understanding, for such a belief hides truth and builds on error. Miracles are impossible in science, and here science takes issue with popular religions. The scientific manifestation of power is from the divine nature and is not supernatural, since science is an explication of nature. The belief that the universe, including man, is governed in general by material laws, but that occasionally spirit sets aside these laws, this belief belittles omnipotent wisdom and gives to matter the precedence over spirit. It is contrary to Christian Science to suppose that life is either material or organically spiritual. Between Christian Science and all forms of superstition, a great gulf is fixed, as impassable as that between Dives and Lazarus. There is mortal mind reading and immortal mind reading. The latter is a revelation of divine purpose through spiritual understanding, by which man gains the divine principle and explanation of all things. Mortal mind reading and immortal mind reading are distinctly opposite standpoints from which cause and effect are interpreted. The act of reading mortal mind investigates and touches only human beliefs. Science is immortal and coordinate neither with the premises nor with the conclusions of mortal beliefs. The ancient prophets gained their foresight from a spiritual, incorporeal standpoint, not by foreshadowing evil and mistaking fact for fiction, predicting the future from a groundwork of corporeality and human belief. When sufficiently advanced in science to be in harmony with the truth of being, men become seers and prophets involuntarily, controlled not by demons, spirits, or demigods, but by the one Spirit. It is the prerogative of the ever-present divine mind and of thought which is in rapport with this mind to know the past, the present, and the future. Acquaintance with the science of being enables us to commune more largely with the divine mind, to foresee and foretell events which concern the universal welfare to be divinely inspired, yea, to reach the range of fetterless mind. To understand that mind is infinite, not bounded by corporeality, not dependent upon the ear and eye for sound or sight, nor upon muscles and bones for locomotion, is a step towards the mind science by which we discern man's nature and existence. This true conception of being destroys the belief of spiritualism at its very inception. For without the concession of material personalities called spirits, spiritualism has no basis upon which to build. All we correctly know of spirit comes from God, divine principle, and is learned through Christ and Christian Science. If this science has been thoroughly learned and properly digested, we can know the truth more accurately than the astronomer can read the stars or calculate an eclipse. This mind reading is the opposite of clairvoyance. It is the illumination of the spiritual understanding which demonstrates the capacity of soul, not of material sense. This soul sense comes to the human mind when the latter yields to the divine mind. Such intuitions reveal whatever constitutes and perpetuates harmony, enabling one to do good but not evil. You will reach the perfect science of healing when you are able to read the human mind after this manner and discern the error you would destroy. The Samaritan woman said, "Come, see a man which told me all things that ever I did. Is not this the Christ?" It is recorded that Jesus, as he once journeyed with his students, knew their thoughts, read them scientifically. In like manner, he discerned disease and healed the sick. After the same method, events of great moment were foretold by the Hebrew prophets. Our Master rebuked the lack of this power when he said, "O ye hypocrites, ye can discern the face of the sky, but can ye not discern the signs of the times?" Both Jew and Gentile may have had acute corporeal senses, but mortals need spiritual sense. Jesus knew the generation to be wicked and adulterous, seeking the material more than the spiritual. His thrusts at materialism were sharp, but needed. He never spared hypocrisy the sternest condemnation. He said, "These ought ye to have done, and not to leave the other undone." The great teacher knew both cause and effect, knew that truth communicates itself, but never imparts error. Jesus once asked, "Who touched me?" Supposing this inquiry to be occasioned by physical contact alone, his disciples answered, "The multitude thronged thee." Jesus knew, as others did not, that it was not matter, but mortal mind whose touch called for aid. Repeating his inquiry,
he was answered
by the faith of a sick woman. His quick apprehension of this mental call illustrated his spirituality. The disciples' misconception of it uncovered their materiality. Jesus possessed more spiritual susceptibility than the disciples. Opposites come from contrary directions and produce unlike results. Mortals evolve images of thought. These may appear to the ignorant to be apparitions, but they are mysterious only because it is unusual to see thoughts, though we can always feel their influence. Haunted houses, ghostly voices, unusual noises, and apparitions
brought out in dark
seances either involve feats by tricksters or they are images and sounds evolved involuntarily by mortal mind. Seeing is no less a quality of physical sense than feeling. Then why is it more difficult to see a thought than to feel one? Education alone determines the difference. In reality, there is none. Portraits, landscape paintings,
facsimiles
of
penmanship,
peculiarities of expression,
recollected
sentences, can all be taken from pictorial thought and memory as readily as from objects cognizable by the senses. Mortal mind sees what it believes as certainly as it believes what it sees. It feels, hears, and sees its own thoughts. Pictures are mentally formed before the artist can convey them to canvas.